Good morning. And welcome to the May 26th Land Use Committee, Land Use and Sustainability Committee. An exciting day today. It's our first meeting where we are in person in a somewhat hybrid manner, but we're here, delighted to be here, joined by my colleagues, Commissioner Areola, Commissioner Gongora, ably assisted by a number of capable folks, including our staff liaison, Tom Mooney, and Nick Lurgis from the City Attorney's Office. I'm Commissioner Mark Samulin, honored to chair this committee, delighted to have the public participating both from Zoom and in person on any item. We welcome public comment. In the interest of time, that comment is generally limited to 2 minutes, and we ask that you raise your hand or speak when that item comes up. Now, in terms of some dial-in info, in case you're still looking for it, on Zoom, we have the meeting ID 85059923037, and by telephone, you have 888-475-4499. I also want to recognize Commissioner Miner, who is with us by Zoom at this point in time. And with that, Tom, do we have any announcements before we dive into our agenda?
Oh, there it is. Thanks, BJ. As I was saying, it's good to see everybody in person. We have I just have a couple of announcements. We have two time certains. Item number 7 pertaining to the status of water quality on Parkview Island is a time certain of 8 a.m. And item number 8, which is pertaining to Care Resource Pharmacy, that has a time certain of not before 9:30 a.m. There are two deferrals. Item number 2, pertaining to projects on West Avenue, Indian Creek, Palm View, and First Street, is being deferred to the June meeting. And item number 9, pertaining to a proposal on the parking lot of 1000 Washington Avenue, is also being deferred to the June meeting. Lastly, I wanted to know for the record that on item number 3, Commissioners Gongora and Commissioner Samulin will be the sponsors of that item. Those are the only announcements, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that, Tom. So we are going to begin with our time certain, the item number 7, discussing the status of water quality in Parkview Island. I'm the sponsor. Co-sponsor is Commissioner Steinberg. I'll just tee this up with the fact that we have had some discussions at Commission about some water quality issues in that area. This has obviously been a concern by a number of the residents, people who live and use that wonderful island. So really what I wanted to just understand is, where are we? What do we know? What are the issues that we're addressing, and what's our game plan to address this? So with this, I believe it's going to be Elizabeth Wheaton who is going to kick us off.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Today we are going to hear from eSciences, who has put together a presentation to give a background before I turn it over to Maria and Nadia from eSciences. The history of this is back in March of 2020, there was a force main break in the vicinity of 72nd Street. As a result of that force main break, the city began sampling the waterway adjacent to Parkview Island, where we have a kayak launch. During those samplings, it was clear that there was a chronic issue related to water quality as opposed to issues with the sewer, the sanitary sewer spill. So we began a multi-tiered investigation with Public Works. I have Mariana here from our Public Works team who will be able to answer specific questions related to their investigations. And, you know, as of November, we could not determine a potential cause. At that juncture, we retained eSciences to assist at looking at the data that the city had collected so far and provide us with feedback on what the next steps should be. I want to note that eSciences has worked throughout the South Florida region in helping municipalities with these types of issues, so we feel that we are in good hands. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Nadia Locke and Maria to queue up their presentation.
Good morning, everyone. This is Maria Baitubi with eSciences. Like Betsy said, we've been working with the city. Nadia and I are working together, taking the lead on this project. And I'm going to share my screen for a quick presentation. Just make sure. Now, if you can, everybody should be able to see it now. So we wanted to share with you what we've been doing, what the city has so proactively been doing to address this area and the residents' concerns regarding the water quality at the kayak launch. This is, like Betsy mentioned, a multi-tier effort. There's a lot of ongoing efforts. One of them being the data review that we are conducting to identify potential trends and observations that the data that we have can provide. And it's also a multivariable set of data, and I'll talk about this in just a minute. On other elements that the city is conducting, they are continuing to conduct monthly monitoring in multiple locations across the city as well. We conducted another round of sampling at the kayak launch area just recently in April. In this sampling, it was more tailored to really see what was happening in the area in terms of what was the outfalls, some of the structures upstream from the outfalls. And also we incorporated considerations about the tide conditions during the sampling event. We're reviewing some literature regarding the technical background on these kind of conditions in water surface. And also we have background on having worked with other municipalities such as like the city of Fort Lauderdale, which Nadia has been very involved with in a similar study. The other aspects that the city is continuing to implement that are also very important in this project are the community outreach with the advertisements, the educational signs and the flyers that they have distributed throughout the city and the area, continue to educate the citizens. And they also continue to implement those proactive responses to any sanitary sewers or potential sewer breaks. And one more thing that runs parallel with our study is the city continues to not only maintain, but also conduct their investigation about the integrity and the functionality of their sewer and stormwater systems by conducting smoke tests and video in the sewer lines. So that also is very valuable in not only trying to identify, but also trying to rule out the sources of these coliform that we detect in the surface water in the area. So a little bit on what's going on with the data. There is a lot of data. The city actually has a substantial amount of data for ambient locations, meaning surface water locations, outfall locations in the actual discharge point of the outfall, and then inland locations, meaning upstream of those outfalls, to see what's happening on different locations and trying to establish some sort of trend and follow through that trend and investigate those trends. The data actually dates back to 2016, not just for the kayak launch. Let me be clear, this is also citywide data. So there's not only the kayak launch, but also other locations and not only coliform, but other water quality parameters, which is valuable to try to also correlate other water quality conditions such as pH or ammonia, that if it correlates with any of the high or low trends of coliform bacteria. So just a quick snapshot of what the city has. And this is only, this map just generally just shows you, you know, that there, they're multiple and across the entire city. And I believe this only has 2019 to 2020 data. So you can see the volume of data that we're trying to process and evaluate to be able to do, like I said, rule or identify a source or conditions that might be triggering these concentrations. So, you know, and then focusing on just a specific, the kyamines, right? Because we have to look at the 10,000 foot view, and then we have to take that and focus on the kayak launch and see what is really going on here. And how everything funnels into this location. So the data that is available dates back to 2019 for this area. There's, a lot of data that we're sorting out, but also we have to sort out that the data is was collected at times and places that give us the information that we need to be able to make some sort of observation, trends, or conclusions. So we have ambient locations, like I say, outfalls and upstream locations. The city also collected sediment samples. Like I mentioned, they hired a contractor to conduct the sewer line testing, and they hired us to conduct this data review. And we also conducted this additional sampling. What we did is we went back to the kayak launch and focused on the outfalls locations. And see what was going on these discharge points and how that was affecting the water quality here. We forecasted the tide, and we prepared a sampling plan that was for multiple days, multiple times of the days, because, you know, we want to see, is the tide influencing, is the time of day, is it a different weather conditions or rainfall? So we did a limited study in the area to see what that information would tell us, and it would clear us a path to follow in any kind of trend of observation. So these are just multiple features that are on the area, such as, you know, where the sewer is, where the outfalls are in our sampling locations. So then, you know, what happens to all these data? And these graphs have just limited data again, because the, you know, an overload of information to put on a graph. But these are the typical things that we're looking. We're looking at where is the rainfall? Okay, well, there was a major rainfall event in such day. How much data we have? Let's go back on, let's study what the rainfall, how it affected the data, not only kayak launch, concentrating on that, but also see what other locations might be telling us about the water quality conditions.
So excuse me, Maria, very helpful, and I appreciate the analytical rigor. Just in the interest of time, could we get to sort of the conclusions that we have at this point, next steps, please?
Sure. So the moving forward. So right now, where we are is, again, we are focusing on the kayak launch, and we're developing these trends, if any. We're trying to identify them. We're putting all the information together to see what those, you know, the effects of the such as rainfall, tides, the different locations of the and the land use of each of the sampling locations, how that's varied, and look at what discharges are happening in those specific locations. And we are coordinating with the city to gain more information about all the studies that they have conducted for their leak testing and videos. We're compiling all of that and evaluating the potential need for a more tailored sampling plan. Once we have those trends to follow, we first have to identify those trends to be able to follow them. And right now we've seen some fluctuations on the concentrations. We are working on figuring out what those fluctuations mean. What is creating those fluctuations, and so we can find that the background that is contributing to those fluctuations. And we're going to do some potentially some fecal gene biomaker, which is just a specific analysis to see the source of the bacteria. If it's, you know, there was some done a while ago on some sediment to see if it was dog feces or human feces, and that can be done as well to further define the study. And we also would like to consider some ambient sources and background conditions that might be affecting the water quality in the area as well. And as always with any study, we're always trying to identify and solve any data gaps. So right now we're, like I said, we're looking at these trends and we are coordinating, you know, and compiling all this information to define the need for a the next steps of the study.
Okay. Thank you for that helpful presentation. And I appreciate that the administration has brought in outside expertise, including e-sciences. Colleagues, I believe we are in a situation where we have a problem. We have an approach. My sense is we don't have the answer yet, so we're probably going to have to hear this again. So I just have a couple quick questions for Ms. Wheaton. Betsy, first off, good that we now have e-sciences. Do you currently have the resources you need to address the problem?
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, at the time, right now, we do have the resources that we need. We do need to continue to investigate as well as, you know, looking at it from a two-pronged approach. One piece is the sampling. Another piece is what may be happening physically on the ground. We may need to come back and ask for additional funding depending on how the next round of analysis goes, and we're happy to provide an update at the next committee meeting.
Yeah, I think that's good on the update, and if indeed there is a resource need, that would be something we want to hear about. Betsy, I feel, you know, really bad for our residents up there. You know, this is a concern. What, if anything, could we do that would help them during this time?
Sure. The City of Miami Beach has a number of public kayak launches, including Pine Tree Park and Maurice Gibb Park at 1800 Purdy. There's also the ability to rent or to use stand-up paddle boards and kayaks on the ocean side of the city. So I think, unfortunately, while this kayak launch is closed, we encourage residents to utilize one of the other public access points or take advantage of the ocean side of the city.
Thank you for that. My last comment before I look to my colleagues, you know, I think it's really important that we closely communicate with the affected neighbors. There's now a Parkview Neighborhood Association. So as we have information, I think it'll be important that we share with them. I think it'd be great and to ensure they know that we've brought in outside expertise like e-sciences. And I hope we fix it soon. I certainly look forward to hearing a productive update at the next meeting. Those are my comments. Let me see if either my colleagues or anyone from the public. Commissioner Gongora is recognized.
Yes, very briefly. Thank you for putting this item on. Obviously, the quality of our water is one of the critical issues in the city. Just had a couple of questions and follow-ups. Some of the people that live across from Parkview Point Island, whenever they see leakage, spillage, what have you, they start, I don't know about my colleagues, they start tagging me on Facebook in photos. So I guess I wanted to ask the administration, for those that are watching, if people notice any type of spillage or leakage, what is the best way for them to immediately notify the city?
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. Vice Mayor Gongora, the best way to, if you see a discharge, is to call 604-CITY, 305-604-CITY. That goes to our control room, and we can send an inspector out there immediately to see where the discharge is coming from. One of the challenges, if we are just hearing about it from Facebook and somebody tagging someone, we don't get that immediate info, and we can't get out there in time to potentially stop that discharge. So we encourage residents to use the eGov app, which you can download from the Apple or Android store and report, or to call 604-CITY, and we will have an inspector out there to determine what the cause is and get that stopped immediately.
Okay, thank you, Betsy. And then to make sure I understood correctly, then, Because Neighborhoods Committee approved a kayak pilot project. Is that one of the things that's not happening right now at Parkview Point? Is it only happening at Pine Tree Park? What's going on with that pilot that we approved at Neighborhoods?
Sure. At this time, the kayak launch located adjacent to Parkview Island is closed due to the no contact advisory. Not sure. I don't see Parks on the phone, but I believe that they were going to continue to wait to hear how our investigations are going, because I think we all want to get that Parkview location opened as soon as we can.
Okay. Please coordinate with them, because the meeting was just last week at Neighborhoods, and Parks had identified Parkview Point as being the perfect spot to launch the pilot. So clearly it's not. I guess we'll just move forward with Pine Tree Park for the moment. And then finally, I did read the item. I understand that we're in talks with some development construction specialists to implement $25.7 million worth of infrastructure upgrades. I'm not sure how many of those are related to this particular project or not. But I was wondering, you're saying that it could take approximately 24 months to do the upgrades that you need to do in the area, the trenchless gravity pipe rehabilitation. I was wondering, is there something we can do to expedite that? 2 years seems like a long time to do a critical project like this.
Sure, thank you. Nelson, our city engineer, is on the line, or Mariana, if one of you would like to take that question.
Sure, not a problem. Commissioners, Nelson Perez Acome, city engineer. We are definitely looking at expediting that. We just got under contract and are finalizing the award of the trenchless and rehabilitation contract that would allow us to perform these services. It's really part of identifying exactly where the problem is for us to be able to rehabilitate it in a trenchless manner. So what we found to date is that when we've been performing the smoke testing in North Beach, we have not identified a particular leak. So we have no reason to believe that the sewer is the culprit in the water quality issue. We are looking at it from both the sewer aspect and from an ambient water quality aspect. And we're trying to find out exactly what the data tells us the culprit is for us to be able to find the appropriate solution. The answer, in short, is yes, absolutely. We can expedite it as soon as we identify, or if we were to identify an issue. It's just that right now we don't have an issue with the sewer system that has been identified in the North Beach area.
Okay, well, thank you. I guess for the sponsor, then, what would you like to do? Are you concluding this? Is we going to hear via LTC? Or
I'd like to bring it back next month, colleagues. I'd like to hear the update. I'd like to hear it till we get an answer.
Okay.
All right. And we'll show that, and seeing no objection, we'll show that done by acclamation. Item number 3, expedite the opening of the Baywalk and moving the reopening of the Baywalk up on the Geobond prioritization list. Commissioner Gongora and I are our co-sponsors. Commissioner, I'll recognize you, and then I'll say a word or two about what I'm thinking and what I would like to hear today. But if you would like to start.
Sure, I'll speak briefly. I think this came out of Land Use Committee. I think all three of us were in favor of this when we were discussing the block in front of Southgate. We all had questions about expediting it. The commission talks a lot. I think we're all united in wanting to finalize the Beachwalk ASAP and then turn our attention to the Baywalk. I think it's wonderful that as a result of our nudging, as I understand it, the Baywalk has moved up to the first tranche in the geobond prioritization. So at this point, I think we'd like to give the neighborhood an update of what to expect, what the timeline is, and let's see this vision through.
Yeah, perfectly said, and I think we are all in alignment. The opening of the beach walk, I was out there walking yesterday. It's an incredible accomplishment by the city, and the city administration should be commended. But what I'm particularly excited about is this vision to go from the beach to the bay, all the way down the beach, around South Point Park, over our new pedestrian bridge on Fifth Street, and now the Baywalk. So given we got the Beachwalk open, we have got to move forward. So for today, what I'd love to hear, big picture update, any issues, key milestones, and then this is something, colleagues, I think we need to keep some focus on. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to whoever in the administration, maybe David Martinez in CRP.
Yes, Commissioner, Mr. Chair. Good morning, David Martinez, Director of Capital Improvements. I'll start the way you set it up. So the big picture is there's three types of conditions related to the Baywalk. You have those sections that are completed and accessible at this time. You have sections that are completed and for some reason not accessible at this time. And then you have sections that have not been completed at all. I'm not going to get too much into the ones that are completed and accessible. I think we're all concerned about the ones that need to open. There's two segments of completed Baywalks that are not open to the public at this time. One is at the Southgate Tower apartment at 900 West Avenue, and the other is at Monat Terrace, 1300 West Avenue. And those, obviously, we can get into any of the details that planning can probably help us with if we want to go into that those details, but those are completed. Then we have all the sections that remain unfinished, and I'll take them from the top. Let me begin with the ones that are funded by our general obligation bond. The first one, and I'll start from south to north, as well known as the Fifth Street Pedestrian Bridge. Fifth Street Pedestrian Bridge is being designed and will be constructed by the developer of the tower, as we all know, at 500 Alton in the coming months. Where we stand with that timing is the design is probably around 50-60% completed. The developer's making revisions to their design to submit later this summer to all the permitting agencies, specifically the city as well as the Department of Transportation, and to some degree Miami-Dade County Public Works. The plan is to complete the permitting next year and begin construction sometime in the summer of 2020. The expected construction duration is about 12 months a year. So in theory, we're looking at completion sometime in the summer of 2023. So that is the timeline with respect to the pedestrian bridge. Continuing north, there's three other segments that are being funded by the general obligation bond. One segment is about 425 feet at the South Bay Club condominium at 800 West. We have the Bayview Terrace condominium at 1228 West. It's about 130 feet. And another 210 feet at Bay Garden Manor condominium. Those three, CIP will begin moving forward on those now that the commission approved the reprioritization of some of the funding on the different tranches of the GOB program. So my staff is in the process of coordinating some internal meetings with pertinent city staff to kind of get our bearing in terms of how we're going to approach this. Once we figure that out, we will be selecting a consultant that will assist us with the permitting and design. All of it will occur with a lot of coordination that will be necessary with the upland property owners at each respective site. The intent for these three is, even though it will be the same consultant that will help us through this, is that they will be designed and permitted as three independent packages. And I'll get into some of the other details, but the permitting process is a very lengthy process when we talk about overwater baywalks. We are experiencing on one of the other ones that I'll talk about in a minute, over a year in permitting with the Army Corps of Engineers, and specifically one of their divisions, which is the National Marines Fisheries Commission, that works through the Army Corps. We have seen extensive durations and even receiving feedback from that federal group. So the permitting will consist of, as I mentioned, Army Corps of Engineers, It'll consist of the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, state level, and at the local level, Miami-Dade, DERM, and in most cases also our city building department. So that is how we're going to approach those. So based on our experience, we don't foresee getting through this permitting, design and permitting and due diligence process with the property owners. It's probably going to take up to 2 years easily to get through that whole process before we're anywhere near able to begin any of this construction. Moving along, we have the next section, which is not GOB funded. This is the section at Lincoln Bay Towers, 1450 Lincoln Road. This is one of the components of the West Avenue Phase 2 infrastructure project that you're all very familiar with. We've been working with that property owner now for quite some time. The designs are well underway in preparation for submittal to the permitting agencies. It's a team effort. It involves a lot of players and a lot of meeting of the minds. So that one is moving forward. And the last not completed section that we're working on is the section associated with the Mondrian Hotel and the Mirador condominiums, the 1100 West Avenue addresses. This is one of the bay walks that's tied through the developer agreement associated with the 500 Alton development. The city's involvement strictly associated with assisting with the permitting of this section of Baywalk, which is approximately 1,000 feet, give or take, altogether, which would tie to the 10th Street seawall Baywalk portion at the street end. We have submitted to all the agencies. We started submittals back in December of 2020. We are in the middle of it. We have received feedback from DERM. We have replied back. We have not received any feedback yet from the Army Corps of Engineers, even though we have submitted back in around December, January of 2020 into 2021. The way that one is structured is once we receive permits, we turn them over to the developer. The developer has a responsibility to construct the seawall, or I'm sorry, the baywalk at that time, within 12 months after we issue the permits. So what does that mean? We don't expect to receive a permit for at least a year, maybe even a little more. So we're looking at beyond 2 years from now before we can envision completion of that segment. So that's kind of what I have. I did, Mr. Chair, if you'd like me to, I had received some questions from West Avenue Neighborhood Association that they'd like us to address. If you like, I can run through those as quickly as I can, so I'll leave it up to your pleasure.
Yeah, David, if we, I appreciate the questions from West Avenue. If we could do it in the lightning round, the real quick version of what's the issue and the answer, that might be educational.
I will do that very quickly. I'll go down the line, the ones that I can't answer. First question is, who is the person assigned to oversee the completion of the baywalk? At this point, it'll be my department, so if it's one person, I would have to say it would be me. Of course, it's all a team, which leads into question number two, which is, well, all the city persons on the team working on completing all these baywalk sections that I spoke about. The team is composed of my division director associated with project development, David Gomez. His team will be the same team that's been working on the West Avenue Phase 2 infrastructure project, Sabrina Baglieri, who's a senior capital projects coordinator, assisted by the George Rodriguez, who is the capital projects coordinator that'll be doing most of the work. However, we work together with Betsy Wheaton's group, environmental. We have to hold hands the whole way through. We also work, of course, very closely with our neighborhood affairs coordinator team, which would be your first line communication throughout the process, and I believe that's the next question, and that would be Kevin Poligo's group and the South Beach coordinator, or coordinator is Lauren Fertel. The next question is, what is the overall process? I think I sort of went through that already related to the permitting and construction. Not all of them are the same. Obviously, some are constructed by the city, designed and constructed, and some are designed and constructed by a third, by a private party, such as the Ped Bridge and the Mondrian and Mirador sections. I already went over, question five was about the permitting agencies. I went through that. Item six is related to what do we do on the three section, on the sections associated with the GOB, if they're overfunded, or I'm sorry, underfunded. I think at this point, that's too early to address. We don't know that yet. We're, like I said, quite some time away from thinking about the construction of most, a lot of these. So that's a little premature at this time. Responsibility of the condo association regarding maintenance, repair, et cetera, as to the Baywalk. I think every section might be a little different. I actually don't have an answer to that right now. I don't know if one of my colleagues wants to address that before I finish with these questions. There's a lot of questions about the materials of design, continuity of aesthetics, and all that. I think they're all very good points. We'll be working all those. All of these will be coordinated with the planning department in terms of aesthetics. They'll be taken to the design review board as needed and as prescribed for the planning department. So, and all of the designs, of course, at any point in time, including the one that's being asked for at 1415 Lincoln, we are happy to share those with anyone in West Avenue Neighbor Association or any other interested parties. I think I sort of touched on everything, and I'm open for any other questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that, Dave. That very helpful update to see all this in one place. I think it's the first time I've seen it like this, so that's great. I didn't hear a specific ask, so I'm going to assume that at this point there are not resource issues or things that policy the commission needs to do. You can certainly correct me if that's the case. I think what's on my mind is sort of three things. One, getting it done as quickly as possible. Two, operational issues on the Baywalk. And three, sort of the best process moving forward so that we can be updated and provide support and to a degree oversight. So there are a lot of moving parts. We're not going to go into the weeds here in this session, but it does sound like there are a couple areas that could be coming sooner rather than later. I believe Monad Terrace, the building, as I walk by it a few times a week, looks like it's almost done. My understanding is when they have a CO, we're going to get a new piece of Baywalk. So that's goodness. I want to ask about one specific one, 1450 Lincoln. It's an important property. It is the most northern property, and it'll be to the connection to what we sort of refer to as the end of the Baywalk, which is at the intersection of Lincoln and the Bay. I attended a meeting, David, as you well know, with Sabrina and some of your team. I think they had some follow-up questions. I know there were some next steps, but that one particularly, given it's part of West Avenue, seems like it's close in. So are we ready to proceed? Are there any open issues that you want to bring to our attention on 1450?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have made some more progress since the meeting that you're referencing. They asked us to share with them certain elements of the design that needed to be updated. The designer is completing that right now, so we will be following up with them and sharing that with them. Specifically, they wanted to see what the handrail would look like, so that is in the process of being shared with them. The indication we're getting is that if they are satisfied with what the design looks like, they will be prepared to help us begin the permitting process here very soon. As I mentioned, in terms of the permitting, it required the permits. Most of the permits require that the upland property owner sign off on the application. So it's critical that we come to a consensus on all of these with the property owner. So I think we're making progress. My staff is not telling me that there's anything that's bringing us to a screeching halt on this. It's just I call it a labor of love to find something that works for everybody. Every single one of them has his own challenges and are different Some of them are fully over water, some of them are partially over water and over land. So we'll be addressing those on a case by case.
Good. And David, I know your focus is the construction. For a future discussion, I think it's important that we at least begin some of the planning around the operational issues in play. You mentioned maintenance and repair, which West Avenue folks have said. Questions related to cleanliness. Having walked there quite a bit, I think, candidly, we could do a little better on that already. When it expands, you know, we might have to think about security and safety. You know, perhaps a park ranger around there might be helpful. So I don't want to dwell on that, but I'd like to put that on the plate as we build, that we're thinking about the operational side. Final comment, and then I'll open it up to my colleagues or the public. You know, I'd like to stay close to this, colleagues. I'd like to hear periodic updates. I don't have a magic number. I was thinking maybe quarterly, but I you know, welcome your thoughts, just to see that this is happening as expeditiously as possible, and if there are barriers we can address. So those would be my comments. I do not see the public at this point. Now I do see the public, unless either my colleagues want to be recognized first. No, hold on. Commissioner Arriola, you go first, please. And then Joseph will recognize you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think you summarized a lot of my feelings as well. David, thank you for a thorough presentation, as always. Thank you for being diligent. I think, to your point, I think it's one of our commission priorities, and I know it's a priority for most of the city. I mean, this is overwhelmingly popular. It's a public good that, you know, our residents have been clamoring for decades, and we need to deliver for them. We've got a plan. We've got money. I know that in the next few weeks or months, we're going to be sitting down with our city manager and laying out our goals for her for the upcoming years, and maybe we can make this one of her priorities to help us deliver this for our residents, you know, once and for all. That might be a way to keep this on the front burner.
Good. Very good thoughts, Commissioner. And, you know, I do sense there's a strong alignment from the policy makers with the administration, our community. Joseph, you're recognized. And then let me see if I have anyone. Hold on, just because I also want to take some. Let me do this, Joseph. I want to do online first, because you're with us, so if you can stand there just another minute. So I'm going to recognize for 2 minutes, we have a virtual call-in. Amy Leitos is recognized for 2 minutes, please.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much. I am on the committee with Gail Durham and WAVNA regarding the Baywalk, and we wrote up these questions, which were addressed, and we thank you very much for doing that. However, there were a couple which you touched on, Commissioner Simulian, which I would like to elaborate on more. A couple of those are, first of all, we'd like a point person who we could reach out to in case there are any questions or concerns regarding the Baywalk construction, and even after the fact, after it's all completed. The other item is a park ranger. We believe it's very important that there be someone who is in charge of surveillance, of monitoring, of just being there on the premises. And we feel that it should be a designated person who perhaps could be tied in to the park at 6th Street. So those are great concerns, especially considering that one of the objections many of the buildings and residents have to the Baywalk is security. So if we can allay those fears by saying there will be security, that will be one hurdle that we will have overcome. So, again, thank you so much for expediting this and for making it a priority.
Thank you for that helpful feedback. David, I believe you might have touched on this, but if I could bring you back just for a second. From a community outreach, neighborhood affairs, if the community has a question or concern, who is the best person and maybe even their email of how the community could reach them?
I don't know if Kevin Polito's on the call or Lauren Fertel. I believe that Lauren Fertel is the first line of contact from the Neighborhood Affairs Division. I'm sure we can share. I'll see if I can share her information on the chat. But she's obviously in tune with everything that's happening on the South Beach part of town. I believe that is, that will be the case. If anything changes, we can certainly put that information out.
Sounds great. If we've got it on the chat, that's great. Lauren Fertel, in charge of Neighborhood Affairs, South Beach Projects, and her contact info also is on the website. You go to the homepage, look under Neighborhood Affairs. Joseph, you've been patient.
Joseph Magazine, 650 West Avenue. Thank you, commissioners, for bringing this to the forefront. Obviously, very critical project that was allocated in the GEO bonds, but really when we talk about tying different things together, I think this could kind of kill many birds with one stone here. We just had a public meeting for safety, biking, infrastructure earlier in the week, and also when we think about climate change and in terms of sustainability, this could be looked at as some sort of physical barrier that could, perhaps help pad against that. While I am very thankful that this is being prioritized now, I will just, perhaps even warn staff, this is something that really isn't going to be driven by our elected officials. It's great that you are kind of lighting a fire under city staff, but these are the same things, the permitting issues we've talked about for at least 5 or 6 years now. And it seems like we're in great hands now with David taking over the process. I guess I would just send my advice to him. This isn't something where we can sit back and be reactive to. If this takes city staff, led by the city manager, coming in and calling every day or every week to get an update on where the permitting process was, I think that's what's going to need to be done. Because like I said, these permitting processes, this is the exact same things that were discussed, at least 5 years ago, and there hasn't been, one centimeter of progress other than just getting the funding here. So I think we looked at the commission to kind of just light a fire under city staff, and city staff needing to take a very proactive approach in addressing some of these permitting issues, because like we've seen over the past few years, it's not going to be something that just falls into our laps. So with that, thank you for the time, and thank you for the attention on this.
Thank you, Joseph, for your comments. And yes, obviously our city administration is going to lead the charge. We agree with proactive. Thank you for recognizing the important funding that is now in place that wasn't there. And also, now some projects like the bridge moving forward. Colleagues, I think did you want to speak on the Baywalk?
Yes.
Specifically? Yeah, please.
Donna Magazine, 650 West Avenue. I have questions regarding, and this may already have been discussed at past meetings, but I'm new to the community, and will there be restrictions to access to the Baywalk at each of the individual condominium sites? In other words, right now, if you go up further on the Baywalk from where I live, there are gates that close at sunrise, restricting walking along the Baywalk. How will access be allowed? Will it be 24/7, and will they be able to be accessed at the end of each property? Thank you.
Thank you for that question. That sort of falls under the broader umbrella of operational issues that I think we really want to get our hands around. David, if you have a quick thought on that, that would be amazing. And if the answer is that's what we're working, including operational safety, and you'll bring it back, I would understand that as well. Do you want to comment?
I wish I could amaze you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I can with this question. I honestly... our concentration has been on the permitting design and eventual construction. I don't know if someone else, I don't know if Eric Carpenter may be able to share some of his thoughts on that part of it.
Mr. Chair, Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom. I was gonna ask you, since some of these are requirements as a matter of a board order. So I think some of those board orders are lay out the ground rules for access. So, yeah, Tom, if you could handle.
Yeah, it's a very good point. It's important to point out that the entirety of the Baywalk lies on private property, and each of these sections of the Baywalk is part of a development order. and each of these orders have specifics regarding time frames, gates, and things like that. Now, unfortunately, because these sections of the Baywalk have been done piecemeal over the last 10, 15 years, there are some minor differentiations. Some may say 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Some may say dawn to dusk. I think that we, as we begin to permit these last sections, we're going to have to come up with an operational plan that bridges all of those gaps and provides some semblance of a uniform type of operation. But clearly, under these development orders, all of the different properties have the right to install security gates, all have, but they are required to provide access for the better part of the day, particularly when it is daylight.
Thank you for that, Tom. And I do think, and I appreciate the comment, that operational plan addressing hours of operation, safety, cleanliness, I think we need to start cooking on that. Okay, colleagues, I think we've had a good discussion by way of update. I was going to wrap, and I see a hand, so let's hear from Valerie Navaretti, and then we are going to move on. Valerie.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Really quickly on the comment following up the lady's previous comment. I was once on the Baywalk and for a sunset walk, and that portion that they closed the gates, they actually closed the gates while I was in there with a friend of mine and a dog. Now, luckily, the guy that locked the gates was just a few steps from us, so we could yell at him and ask him to please open the gate. But it's okay. It's private property. They closed the gate, but warn the people before they close both sides so we don't get stuck in there. So that would be like a quick comment. Can you please talk to the condominiums that they have the courtesy of letting the people know that they are closing both sides and you're going to be stuck in there?
Thank you for that, Valerie. So, colleagues, I'd like to keep focus on this. I'll throw it out as just a thought. Maybe we could bring it back in 3 months, sort of a quarterly checkpoint. I'm not married to that time frame, but just so we can see the progress that we're making. Is that acceptable?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, let's show that by acclamation. Thank you to staff for putting a comprehensive update. We look forward to progress, and we'll see it in 90 days. With Mr. that, Chair. Let's move on to item number.
Mr. Chair, just to confirm, please. That'll be the September Land Use Committee meeting that we'll bring this back to.
Thank you, Tom. And item number 4, Tom, can you just update us on where we sort of left off here? You know, we started broadly about rooftop, but then we started talking about West Avenue. Can you just give a brief briefing to this body?
Sure. When this item was discussed last month on April 29th, we had gone over some of the specifics in the code, and they're included in the background section of the memo as it pertains to allowable height exceptions and the exceptions to the definition of floor area. And we had a very general discussion about that. At the April 29th meeting, the committee also discussed the impact of height exceptions and rooftop uses along Alton Road, and specifically the impact to the residential uses on the east side of West Avenue. And the direction of the committee was to come back with more information on what the current regulations are for commercial uses along the west side of Alton Road so that you could have a more informed discussion about whether or not consideration should be given to updating those. We've provided in the memo the current regulations pertaining to rooftop uses along the west side of Alton Road. And basically, within the CD2 district, rooftop uses are limited to restaurants only. And there are some very specific restrictions on hours of operation. There are no bars permitted. And if the occupational load of a rooftop restaurant exceeded 300 persons, it would require conditional use approval. We also outline the exceptions that were recently adopted for outdoor movie theaters. However, these exceptions for outdoor movie theaters only apply to that portion of the west side of Alton Road between 16th Street and Collins Canal. So it's a much more limited area. the administration recommends that the Land Use Committee discuss this item and conclude the item with no further actions.
Thank you for that, Tom. So just to be clear, there's a separate legislative item moving for some height increases, and that is moving on a separate track. This is really for more what's here today. Is that correct, Tom?
Correct. The ordinance pertaining to the proposed height increase for the west side of Alton Road to accommodate office uses was just transmitted by the planning board yesterday. It will be coming before the City Commission for first reading on June 23rd.
Okay. Let's see if anyone from the public wants to be recognized on this item. Ms. Magazine, you're becoming a regular. We like to have you, so you're recognized.
Donna Magazine, 650 West Avenue. As I said, I'm new to the area. Prior to purchasing our condo at 650 West, I was aware of the plans for the construction of the new tower and the allowances and variances that were made to proceed, and what was presented at that time and agreed upon, if I'm not mistaken, by the mayor as well as all of the commissioners, was the presentation that this variance for the higher tower would be made based on a change in plans from the density that was first presented. In other words, it would minimize traffic, it would have an aesthetic appeal as well. But I can't help but feel that now the changes are being made to the plans that were already agreed upon to step back and say, oh, well, let's change this now. We've got the approval for this high tower. Now I'm asking for approval of an office building with higher height variances. The impact to a residential community with all of these changes are overwhelming. The traffic that is going to be relegated to West Avenue is not going to be able to be projected just by us talking about it. To actually see where, when you come off of MacArthur, to access now two significant towers, the traffic, even accessing the beautiful new park, is going to be very difficult for the residents on the west side of West Avenue. So I just want consideration to be significantly evaluated before approval of another high tower. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. And if I understood the corrective, I believe it's related to the planned project, 500 Alton and the park and potential expansion. So thank you for that. Not in front of us today, but I appreciate those comments. Tom, on the item which is here today, restaurants are currently permitted. Could you talk a little bit about our experience with restaurants? How does the administration view concerns as it might relate to the residents in that area? What, if anything, might we be thinking about as it relates to restaurants on the existing built environment there on West?
Sure. Restaurants are their impact on abutting residential areas and adjacent residential areas are based largely upon the type of operation. So if you look at an operation like Juvia, that's very high-end and is much higher than most surrounding residences, the impact is negligible. Ironically, on buildings that are lower in height, that are in the 50 to 60-foot range, potentially, particularly the open-air portions, they could have more of an impact on abutting or adjacent residential areas. A lot would depend upon the occupational content. A lot would depend upon the hours of operation, because even if you don't have entertainment, the more people that you have that are eating and drinking, the louder they talk. Collectively, that could result in noise impacts. In the south of 5th and Sunset Harbor areas, they have very specific regulations regarding outdoor uses above the first level of a building, where they limit the number of seats to 40 and they limit the hours of operation to 8 p.m. so that they don't become these later establishments that go, even if you have a 2 a.m. closing, that's still a fairly significant amount of time. So that's something that's been done strategically in other areas of the city.
And in terms of the current rules on Alton West in that area, what are the seating max seat and max hours late operations that are permitted?
Currently, the rooftops are limited to restaurants only, and they have to cease operations no later than 11 p.m. on weekdays and 12 at midnight on weekends. They're only permitted to have ambient music, and they're not permitted to have an outdoor bar. However, there is no limit on occupancy. And so if they do have an occupancy that's greater than 300 persons, they would require conditional use approval, but there is no outside limit on the occupancy. It would basically be you could go up to 300 without CUP review, but you could go much higher than that subject to CUP review.
Okay. Let me, colleagues, this is something, you know, we've had a couple discussions. My intent as the sponsor probably is to continue it to one more meeting, sort of digesting what we're hearing. But I would welcome your thoughts here. How do you see this issue? Are there changes that we might consider to protect the residents? Are we happy with what we have? What are you all thinking? Yeah, Michael?
I'm fine with what staff is recommending, that we are looking at these ordinance by ordinance and neighborhood by neighborhood and concluding it. But I do have a question going back to your comments, because one of the items that we talked about last month and that's in the agenda again is the fact that there's an ordinance pending before the planning board yesterday. I don't know what happened. I haven't had time to watch it, which would upzone the west side of Alton Road to allow for office uses. So I think your comments about what's going to happen to the West Avenue residents goes beyond just the 500 Alton Road building, because there's something pending through the city to upzone most of the block. Could you give us an update on that item and what happened to the planning board?
Sure. The planning board had a very lengthy discussion on the item. They went back and forth. They did transmit it to the City Commission with a favorable recommendation. They did make some recommendations that were largely aspirational with regard to, whenever possible, adaptively reusing existing buildings. One of the things that they collectively found attractive about the proposal was that if somebody was going to take advantage of the height increase, the limitations that would be imposed on them with regard to rooftop uses, rooftop exceptions, and more importantly, that they wouldn't be able to do a hotel use if they were going to take advantage of the proposed height increase. So it was transmitted to the commission with a favorable recommendation, and it will be coming before the City Commission for first reading on June 23rd.
Okay. And how many projects are there in there that can be upzoned?
There's probably about 31 parcels that could potentially take advantage of this. As of right now, there has not been any applications contemplated or proposed, even with the proposal to increase the height. So if it is adopted, we have not heard from anybody, at least yet, who is planning on submitting a proposal for this.
Okay. And when will this come before the commission?
June 23rd, first reading.
Okay. Well, I think we should continue to monitor this, because I thought that Alex Fernandez had sent a memo. I feel like he copies me on things where he wanted to put more conditions on the ordinance. Did those get accepted at planning board or not?
They had debated that, but their final recommendation did not include that proposed change. Alex did propose limiting the area that it could apply, but there are specific conditions. They made two recommendations. One was to include the aspirational criteria for adaptively reusing buildings, and the other was to provide a progress report to the planning board and to the commission after four developments are approved for that. So notwithstanding the sunset provision that is currently in the draft of the ordinance, they had suggested that once a fourth project, if they even get to a fourth project, moves forward, that a look back be provided to the Planning Board and the Commission so that both bodies could make further recommendations on that.
Okay. That's not really the specific of this item, but it is an item that is about upzoning and what can go up and added height, and I think there's concerns to the neighborhood. Could you include those recommendations when the commission agenda prints so that we can review them for the June 23rd meeting?
Yes, of course.
Okay, thank you. And I think the residents should be aware in the West Avenue neighborhood that that's coming forward on June 23rd.
I will just say that at least
you're going to have to come to the mic if you want to speak.
Sorry, thank you, Commissioners. I will just say that when this was talked about at last month's Land Use Committee, we talked about community engagement and it coming back to this committee actually what would have been today. I haven't seen that engagement, talking to any single resident on West Avenue, completely unaware except for, you know, the handful of five or six names that we're all familiar with are actively involved, but I don't think that's reflective of true neighborhood engagement. We're talking about serious changes that are being contemplated here. You know me, I've actually been firmly in favor of smart urban planning, the addition of Class A office space. I think the project over in Sunset Harbor is a tremendous template that we can use. Going forward, I believe, approved at 65 feet. So that's an example of Class A office space that can be used within some type of reasonable floor area ratio, height, scale, and density, and things like that. But it seems like there needs to be a lot more things vetted out here. For instance, you know, if you put an office space at 8th, I'm not sure why this would be restricted to the west side, because as you're coming off that MacArthur flyover, just think about practically how that's going to work. You can't make a left-hand turn across traffic on Alton Road. It's one of the busiest and most chaotic streets in all of Miami Beach. So then what you're going to have to do, all these transient office workers coming in and off the beach every single day, they'll have to make a left onto one of the side streets, let's call it 8th Street, and then circle back on West Avenue or do some type of U-turn. I just feel as if we've made some concessions to reverse engineer into maybe one or two specific projects that are in the works, and the planning really hasn't been thought through, and these issues really need to be further discussed, you know, such as limiting to one side or you know, kind of the specific projects, because there hasn't been that community engagement, and I think some of these issues certainly do have to be worked out, and I don't know if a city commission meeting is the best forum to do so. So thank you for the consideration of that.
Thank you for bringing that up. You have a good social media presence. I see you on Facebook all the time, so maybe I'll reach out to Wavna and do a little public meeting in the area before June 23rd. I think you all know that I've been opposed to this. And somebody's texting me now. I haven't watched Planning Board at all, but somebody's texting me that when this went before Planning Board, that originally it was a 3-3 vote, the Planning Board was split, and many people thought the item had died. And then later, I guess the last member arrived at the meeting, and they took a revote, and it passed 4-3 at Planning Board. Is that correct?
Actually, what had happened was they were split 3-3 on whether to send it with the full boundaries, not the reduced boundaries. And one of the members voted, and there were only six members there because one of the members was absent. And so when they deadlocked 3-3, they were in the process of formulating a new motion because they needed to transmit it with a recommendation, whether favorable or unfavorable. And then they had more discussion, and after more discussion, that's when they decided to go ahead and move it forward with those two recommendations.
And so did somebody show up or did somebody flip so it became a
they were able to reach consensus so that all the members agreed to go ahead and move it forward as is, but with these two recommendations regarding the look back and regarding the language to take a close look at the adaptive reuse of buildings where applicable.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Colleagues, I think we're going to conclude this item as the administration recommended. We've had a good discussion, but frankly, it's about things that are not necessarily tied to this specific item. So at this point, as the sponsor, let us conclude that item and move forward. Tom, we have a 9:30 time certain for the discussion number 8. We could take that if those folks are ready, or is there an item that you think in 8 minutes we could actually get through?
Well, we have the two items, item number 1, which is sponsored by Commissioner Steinberg, and then items 5 and 6, which are sponsored by Commissioner Steinberg. I think items 5 and 6, they do have some, it has an ordinance component that may take a little bit more time. Item number 1, we might be able to get through pretty quickly.
Okay.
If you want to try that. I know. I think Betsy was going to handle that item.
Great. Let's try and handle item number 1, and then we'll go to our 9:30 time certain. Ms. Wheaton, do you want to kick us off? Or if I don't believe Commissioner Steinberg's with us, but if she was, we would welcome her view. So go ahead, Ms. Wheaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this item is a standing item that we provide regular updates regarding the city's efforts related to expanding green infrastructure and living shorelines. I have a very brief presentation just because so much of this is so visual. So let me share my screen. Okay. So as we're thinking about living shorelines, as we're thinking about living shorelines, some of the challenges that we have are finding adequate locations, the difficulties with permitting, including mitigation, and looking for innovative designs that work in our urban environment. Currently, we have the Brittany Bay Hybrid Shoreline, which is going to be going under further construction beginning later this summer. This project pooled the seawall back into the park and created a living shoreline waterward of that seawall. Here are some renderings of what that is going to look like when it's complete. As you can see, there's a much more natural edge, but we still have the protection from the inland seawall. This is an existing living shoreline at Pine Tree Park. This is probably our most mature example of how we can have a living shoreline that provides protection as well as habitat in a natural park setting. Maurice Gibb Park is another living shoreline that we look to expand as part of the upcoming CIP project. Here we have red mangroves that have recruited along the shoreline. But currently we have this boardwalk structure that kind of keeps those mangroves at bay. So the idea would be to remove portions of that boardwalk and then allow the mangroves to have more exposure to the open water. Another project that we're going through permitting right now is our Indian Creek Living Shoreline. For this concept, we're looking to actually build mangrove planters into Lake Pencoast. This will be a very new and novel approach to living shorelines in Miami-Dade County. So if we're able to get this project constructed, it will become a model for other areas in Miami Beach as well as Miami-Dade County where we do not have benthic resources. And there's a need to restore that particular waterway. And that is the end of my presentation. So as we think about next steps, hold on, let me stop sharing. Okay, perfect. As we think about next steps, we will be retaining a coastal engineer to do a seawall viability assessment. They will be looking at the existing seawalls that the city has and provide recommendations for upcoming seawalls that are going to be rehabilitated that are a prime candidate for a living shoreline. They're also going to develop some concepts so that as we move forward for looking at funding, we can present that to the granting agencies. I think this is an important step in further expanding our living shorelines and to also secure future funding to help fund these excellent projects. This item, again, was presented for discussion, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. The sponsor is comfortable with closing out this item if that is the desire of the committee.
Colleagues, any questions, comments on this item?
Just give a brief item. Thank you. I thought that was an interesting presentation, and I'm glad to see that we are doing that and adding green infrastructure. don't really have anything to add, but I appreciate the update. And if it's going to be concluded, if you could just let us know, I guess, quarterly via LTC so we're aware of what's going on.
Sounds right.
Good. Yeah, other than this is important, and we definitely need to get it done. I mean, it is an eyesore for folks looking at the gray infrastructure that we've built. This is a really good solution, so let's keep it a priority.
Agreed. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wheaton. We'll show that item concluded. We have a
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
And just
yes.
In addition to the item being concluded,
yeah.
Updates will be provided as needed via LTC.
Is that acceptable, Commissioner Gongora?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That's good. That's fine. It is approaching 9:30. I see Michael Larkin, who represents, I believe, is involved with the folks from CARE, so we're probably pretty good to tee up item number 8 at this point, seeing no objection to that. Vice Mayor Gongora, I believe this is your item, if you want to kick us off or ask someone else to do so.
Sure, thank you. I'll set it up. I put this on as a discussion item for this committee. Many of you are probably aware or may not be aware of the work that CARE Resource does, but I've been aware of this organization actually since I was a teenager and have partnered with them over now more than 30 years on a number of events. Through various government grants and programs, they're able to provide medication to a lot of people that can't afford health insurance. In particular, a lot of gay men receive HIV medication and other things through them. They are the producer of the AIDS Walk, the producer of the White Party, and many other events that have happened over the years. They presently have an office space in one of the office buildings between 17th Street and Lincoln Road. And as I understand it, they're looking to be able to operate their pharmacy out of an upper floor office space. As we know, and the reason I put this on as a discussion item rather as an ordinance, is we've created zones, so to speak, for pharmacy uses because we all remain very concerned about the proliferation of medical cannabis dispensaries, perhaps going throughout the city. So what I asked our planning director and staff to do was to meet with CARE Resource and for them to make a presentation today about if there's a possibility that would allow them to operate their pharmacy in an office building upstairs without signage, no medical marijuana, but so people can actually get their medicine there at CARE Resource that wouldn't put us in a dangerous or precarious position with perhaps opening the door to medical marijuana dispensaries coming in. I understand that they've met with the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association, who supports this idea, and I believe they've met with the Lincoln Road BID and the Palm View Neighborhood Association as well. If this committee feels comfortable that we can craft something that would allow this use without opening Pandora's box, then I'd like to move forward with an ordinance at next month's meeting. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tom and to CARE Resource.
I think Commissioner Gongora covered it accurately. If there is consensus on the committee to prepare an ordinance, I know that the representatives for CARE have put together some initial drafts. Both planning and the city attorney's office would need to review that to make sure that it complies with the express provisions in state law, because as you're aware, we have to regulate medical cannabis dispensaries in the same way that we regulate pharmacies. And so whenever we create new areas, although very limited, to allow for a pharmacy, you also are allowing potentially a medical cannabis dispensary within that same area. And so we would just need to make sure that that particular ordinance meets the requirements of state law, but we could certainly review that prior to the June meeting if there's consensus to move forward with something like this. I know that the representatives of CARE Resource have a short presentation they would like to make. We forwarded this to everybody in advance so that you had it. So I guess at this point we can go ahead and let them make their presentation.
Yes, Tom. Let's hear a brief presentation from CARE, please. Do we have the folks from CARE?
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Now we can. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, sorry, I'm usually better at that. This is Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, representing Care Resource. I am joined here today with Stuart Stein. And Mr. Chairman, would you be able to promote him over? He's going to do a small portion of the presentation if you see his hand raised.
Yes, if we can bring Stuart over, if our communications team could do that. I think they have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in addition to being here with Stuart Stein from Care Resource, I'm joined with my colleague Nicholas Rodriguez. As Commissioner Gongora pointed out, and as many of you know, Care Resource is an important South Florida nonprofit institution that provides care to thousands of low-income individuals and uninsured individuals here in Miami Beach. They were founded in the 1980s in response to the AIDS crisis, and over time has grown to a multifaceted healthcare organization, offering treatment for almost any ailment to those who need it the most. And as you all further know, Miami Beach and Care Resource have enjoyed a mutually beneficial relationship for a long time now. Care Resource holds its annual AIDS Walk in Miami Beach and was named a community partner by the City Commission. In fact, thousands of Miami Beach residents come to Care Resource for healthcare services to the Miami Beach Clinic, which is just south of 17th Street. Last year alone, there was 3,100 patients and 12,000 visits, many of them, of course, from people that are uninsured. I'd like to turn over now to Stuart Stein. He's going to talk to you about a recent position that's been adopted by Big Pharma that could have a devastating impact on Care Resource and the patients that it serves. Go ahead, Stuart.
Thank you, Michael. Care Resource, as it exists today, exists thanks to a federal program called the 340B program. It does two major things. It provides us access to deeply discounted medications that we provide for free or at a nominal cost to uninsured and underinsured patients. And it's not an insignificant number. Over 2,000 patients receive 17,000 prescriptions, many of them life-sustaining, in the past 12 months. The other side of the program allows us to leverage our insured patients' commercial insurance to generate over 80% of our revenues by using those discounted drugs, but receiving full payment at full price from the patient's insurance. We do this, since we don't own any pharmacies right now, by contracting with Walgreens and CVS to act as if they're a Care Resource pharmacy, and this is done through software. Manufacturers, and at this point, over six of them, have taken the position that if you don't own your own pharmacy, they don't have to sell us these drugs at a discounted price, obviously threatening our ability to continue to supply this vast number of patients and number of prescriptions to our uninsured and underinsured patients. So as of today, we no longer have the ability to buy these medications from these manufacturers who unilaterally made this announcement in August, implemented it virtually overnight. And although the government has said recently that it was illegal, nothing has changed in terms of their current willingness to sell us these drugs. So the lawsuits proceed, but we are cut off. And the bottom line is that Care Resource needs an on-site pharmacy to preserve our 340B revenues, to continue to provide the free medications that we provide to a vast number of people. And without those revenues, we lose the ability not only to provide those free and discounted medications, but to provide the enormous amount of services that we provide to underinsured and uninsured patients through the revenues that this program is currently generating for us. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Stuart. And Mr. Chairman, I neglected to ask that the presentation be pulled up. I just want to go through some slides quickly that kind of reinforce what has just been said. So could that be pulled up? Okay. Next slide, please. So this, of course, reinforces the notion that AIDS Walk is here on a regular basis, once a year. And we do serve over 3,100 patients, at least last year, with 12,000 visits. Next slide. And this is just what Stuart was talking about, 80% of the revenue for Care Resources from this 340B program. Next slide. on the right-hand side, you see the different headlines that collectively tell you all the decision that Big Pharma made and the harmful consequence to Care Resource until it internalizes all of its own pharmacies. Next slide. So what we've tried to do is we went ahead and we obtained a variance. If you notice, there's a two-story retail bill on the east side of Alton with a church on the upper floor. Well, our pharmacy will be right there next to the church. And we are building out that pharmacy now, but it's clearly not an ideal situation. There are many reasons why we need a co-location to have the pharmacy right next to our medical offices at the 1680 Michigan Avenue building. There's terms of client efficiency, client happiness, and certainly most importantly, client privacy, which many of our patients really do need. Next slide, please. This is just telling you all the statutory basis that we must treat dispensaries and pharmacies in the same manner. And that's why you all have adopted subzones throughout the city where the pharmacies and dispensaries can co-locate. Next slide. What we have proposed here is possibly the narrowest subzone possible in the city, with 17th Street as the northern boundary, Lenox on the west, Michigan on the east, and the north lot line of parking lot P25 on the south. But in truth, what you will see when I go through the restrictions and the following slide is that the true boundaries are the green boundaries that represent just our office building. Next slide. So here are a series of restrictions. Some, the first two, for instance, on the left-hand side are in the code, and others we are proffering to add to this particular subzone. The first one on the left-hand side says, you know, the spacing requirement between pharmacies and dispensaries is 1,200 feet. So if we locate our pharmacy here, there can't be another pharmacy within 1,200 feet, and it would put it outside of this subzone. With regard to the dispensary, there could be one dispensary, but if you look at the second bullet, that's an existing regulation. And if you look, is there a spacing requirement between dispensaries and schools? On the north side of 17th Street, you have Lincoln Martee School, which is within that 500 feet zone. Although you can talk to your planning director about it, it might be premature to say what he and his department would say, but I highly doubt that his department would recommend in favor of such a variance request, and I even more so doubt that the Board of Adjustment would grant a variance to permit a dispensary to be closer to a school than 500 feet. The next bullet came from Lyle Stern at the Lincoln Road Bid. We have discussed this matter with Lyle and the executive director and Mike Lorente. We did not make a formal presentation to them. We have not yet obtained their formal support. They've asked for certain things to be included in legislation. I didn't want to present to them yet until we had a more final version of the legislation. While I'm on this point, the Flingo Park Neighborhood Association did go ahead and lend their support to the legislation, even in its beginning stage, as did the Palmview HOA, which is directly to the north of this property. But this third bullet came from Lyle Stern, and we agreed to it. The next bullet basically makes it so that this subzone only would apply to our office building. And importantly, the building cannot front on 17th Street. The next bullet is must be accessory to a medical office, a minimum 800 square feet in size, no exterior signage, no retail, no alcohol sales, 9-to-5 operation. And most importantly, we're proffering that pharmacies cannot sell or distribute cannabis products. Next slide. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. What we're asking you all to do is please let us just try to work with the City Attorney's Office and Planning Department staff to come up with legislation that would address the concerns that I've heard about already, and possibly other concerns that you might voice today. We really would appreciate just that opportunity. Thank you very much for your time. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that, Michael.
And Care.
Been very intentional about where we permitted medical marijuana dispensaries. So I want to be thoughtful about those decisions. And clearly there's a link because pharmacies and medical marijuana dispensaries have to be treated the same. Given what you know right now, how do you see that risk? And maybe to the city attorney as well, how big a risk is that that a decision like this would open the door to a medical marijuana dispensary?
It would certainly open up the possibility of it, and it has to because of the way our legislation is written. We decided to move forward with one of the three options provided by the state, which was to regulate medical cannabis dispensaries in the same way as pharmacies. And so whenever we amend the code to allow for a new area for pharmacies, it has to afford the same opportunity for a medical cannabis establishment. Now, with the benchmarks that are being proposed, it probably reduces the likelihood of that, but it doesn't remove it, nor could it, in order for us to comply with state law. So there certainly would be the possibility at some point in the future that you could see a medical cannabis establishment within this site. The other thing I would note, and again, this is something where planning in the city attorney's office would need to discuss this with Mr. Larkin and his colleagues more, but in order to avoid contract response zoning, it can't be specific to one property. It has to be within an area, but within that area, there has to be some feasibility for multiple sites. And so we have in the past been very, very restrictive, and I think that we could make this very restrictive, but just for transparency purposes, we couldn't come out and say that, yeah, it's guaranteed that there will never be a medical cannabis dispensary within this new subzone.
Yeah, and I think what you shared is helpful, because that's really the one question. Medical dispensary is a need. They're permitted, but we've been very clear about where they go. The thought of recreational marijuana coming to Florida is not a long shot, and it wouldn't be shocking if people say, well, locations that have the medical could have the recreational. All that being said, I support the item today. I support the direction. I believe the sponsor's asking to have care from the administration and the city attorney work towards these items and then bring an ordinance back to this body next month, if I understood it correctly.
Yes, that is my motion today. I share the same concerns I think that the entire body will have. The reason that I feel somewhat comfortable is I think they can draft something very, very narrowly crafted that would not do that. And the fact that, as I understood the presentation, they're looking about something in an office building, in an upper floor, with no signage, gives me at least comfort, because my biggest concern is having something easily accessible to Lincoln Road at the ground floor, where you're going to see young people going in line, and it's going to take a step backward from all the things that we've been proposing over the years. I know Commissioner Areola and I co-sponsored legislation to prevent Walgreens from coming to Lincoln Road, and I stand by that legislation. So I'm looking to see what they can come back with, and if they come back with something we can feel comfortable with, I would like to see Care Resource be able to have the methodology to be able to do what they want to do.
Yeah, I'll just add a very thoughtful presentation. Thank you for taking the time to run through this with us. Obviously, we mean no harm to befall Care Resource, and we're fully supportive of everything they've ever done and will continue to do for our community. We're just trying to address something totally tangential to their own operations, and you know, I trust that our administration can help craft the appropriate legislation. And you know, if we're going to take a small risk in trying to do something for the greater good, then I'm comfortable doing that as well.
Great, thank you, Commissioner Areola. So I think we all see the same picture here, and appreciative of everything CARE has done for our community. And with that, let's show it done by acclamation.
Yes.
To request the city administration, city attorney, to work with CARE Resources to provide draft languages back to this body next month.
Correct.
Okay, Tom?
Yep.
Wonderful. Colleagues, we're making good progress here. Items 5 and 6, I believe, are the last two that we have for this meeting. We'll have other meetings today, too. But for this meeting, if we can get through 5 and 6, that would be a milestone. Commissioner Steinberg is the sponsor of number 5, the ordinance to address sediment and erosion control. Ms. Wheaton, do you want to kick us off on number 5?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. So this the purpose of this ordinance is to help protect Biscayne Bay. Illicit discharges in the form of material and hazardous waste being discharged down our storm drains to construction sites that are have sediment and other debris coming off of them do impact the health of Biscayne Bay. The city's NPDES, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit, regulates and allows for the city to discharge stormwater into and operate the municipal stormwater system. The National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit requires that the city monitor, evaluate, and make adjustments to protect water quality. One of the recommendations that the NPDES permit has is to enact stronger enforcement for illicit discharges. I'd also like to add that the community rating system provides additional points for ordinances that address illicit discharges. This ordinance seeks to codify illicit discharges and discharges from construction sites that do not have proper sediment and erosion controls. The current process that we have today is our environmental team reviews building permits for sediment and erosion controls, and our building department can issue fines as well as stop work orders when we have an illicit discharge from a construction site. However, there are issues that come up that are related to issues on a site that do not have land disturbance or are not associated with a building permit. Currently, the code does not have specific language related to these types of discharges, so this would seek to close that loophole. This ordinance would be an important step in strengthening our code as it relates to water quality, and we are providing this as a recommendation for going to commission for first reading in June.
Thank you for that, Betsy. So sounds like we have something that could be good for the environment. The administration is recommending. Let me look to my colleagues here.
Move the item. I think it's a great idea.
Motion, a good idea. Commissioner Areola? Yeah. So this is the sediment and erosion control, and this would be to bring an ordinance back to the full body of the commission as recommended by the administration. So I'm fine with that as well. I don't sense any objection. So Commissioner Ariel, will show that done by acclamation?
Yeah.
Perfect. So that's great. Thank you. Betsy, you're on a roll, so we'll keep you going. You're the last item. We are on the verge of making it through this one in good time. So let's see if you can do it. Item 6. Commissioner Steinberg is the sponsor. An ordinance providing for dune protection to prevent the destruction or modification of the dune system. Go for it, Betsy.
Thank you, Commissioner Samuelin. Our dune system is our first line of defense, protecting our community from storm surge impacts from hurricanes as well as just strong storms. The beach and the dune system are protected under our beachfront management plan, giving the city the authority to make management decisions. In 2016, the city established its first dune management plan, which requires that non-native vegetation be removed from the dune and provides a planting pallet for the appropriate species that can be planted in this sensitive area. Since then, we have had a number of issues of private properties going into the dune system and making their own adjustments, either trimming vegetation or adding vegetation that is not appropriate. This ordinance proposes to require that only city staff and landscapers can do maintenance activities, and prohibits individuals from entering the dune or conducting activities that are unpermitted within this system. This is going to be a tool to help us better manage that system and ensure that its integrity is not compromised by illicit activities.
Thank you, Betsy, for that informative and concise presentation. Let me look to my colleagues. Commissioner Gongora?
Yes, like the last item, it's very similar. I think it's another wonderful item to help protect the dunes. I move the item forward.
Okay, second. And I, too, am supportive. So we'll show that done by acclamation with the intent to bring an ordinance to the full commission. Tom, it is my sense that we have covered off all the items. Are we complete?
Nope.
Any other actions required?
We're done. And we will be polling everybody individually. It looks like we found an alternate date for June that we think everybody will be able to make, and we'll be polling everybody individually to confirm that.
So thank you to everyone. Thank you to my colleagues. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.